It is the Doomsday Podcast. In just moments after the Cowboys 31-6 victory over the Dolphins, I am live from AT&T Stadium, along with our on-site producer, DJ Ringenberg, Frito back at the helm, the mothership, and then Ed Werder, who was all over the place last weekend. He will be back in business, I'm certain. Ed, there's no way in the world you would miss a trip to New Orleans. Can I just go ahead and book you? I don't even know if ESPN has a major schedule yet, but you will be in New Orleans, won't you?
I have been informed and can now officially announce that I will be covering the Cowboys at the Saints in the Superdome next Sunday night.
All right. That is great news. We'll be on the scene. And I am on the scene just moments ago, talked to Jerry Jones. We'll have some of that from my visit with Jerry. I actually also talked to Tristan Hill for a little bit. We might sample that. That'll be sort of a check with me type situation because Tristan didn't give me a whole heck of a lot. Ed, before we just jump right into the heart of this thing, just thoughts right off the top. Did you see this sort of slow start? I mean, did this thing scream of the Cowboys coming out flat today? Did that surprise you at all or not really?
Well, I first of all, I think the expectations for the Cowboys in this game were fairly huge given how they had performed offensively in the first two games against the Giants and the Redskins. And then you're looking at a situation where they're favored by, 24 points, the biggest point spread in franchise history. I mean, to me, this was like the Cowboys getting a chance to play the 1989 version of themselves. And so I thought it should be a game that would be quickly out of reach for the Dolphins. And the fact that it was close at halftime, and quite honestly, the Cowboys should have been behind at the half if not for Kenyon Drake's fumble at the 5-yard line in the closing seconds of the first half. I think that's a little troubling, but maybe, you know, Brian Flores doesn't get enough credit. You know, keep in mind that 8 months ago, he was calling the defensive signals for Bill Belichick and the Patriots as they beat the Rams in the Super Bowl. And so I think in talking to some Cowboys coaches after the game, they're a little bit of a tricky proposition from an offensive point of view because of how they scheme and game plan week to week in a whole different way, just like the Patriots do. They just don't have nearly the personnel to execute it over the course of four quarters.
Yeah, and it was funny to see Taco. We'll talk about him, Taco Charlton, over on the other sideline, over and actually got some pretty good playing time for the Dolphins and had a sack today. But before we do that, Frito, please play the Doomsday music. All right, it is the Doomsday Podcast, and coming to you live from AT&T Stadium, just moments after a 31-6 victory for the Cowboys. It was all academic once the Cowboys scored to take a, it did feel like when they finally came out and sort of took control in the second half, 17-6, that the game was definitely over. Some trying moments in the first half. In fact, Ed, you've already alluded to it. The Dolphins were down there with a good shot to go up 13-10, knock it on the door. Of course, they had the dropped touchdown. I mean, it was who is that receiver, by the way? I kind of like him. Is that Preston somebody? Preston Williams? He ended up.
Yeah, and you know what? Yeah. On that play, I think you got to give Chido Awuzie a lot of credit because he really wound up knocking the ball out very late in the play in the back of the end zone. So credit him for playing through the entire play and causing the Dolphins to lose what should have been a touchdown and eventually settle for yet another field goal.
Yeah, they did settle for that field goal. Ed, was you were monitoring the broadcast at least today. Was anything made of why Flores, there's about 5 minutes left in the first half when that all happened. Was there any reason why Flores didn't go ahead and challenge that? Because upon review, you could have made the argument that it was, in fact, a catch. He made the catch. He had, one step, two step. I think you could have made an argument for a third step. Why in the world was somebody not in Flores' ear saying, challenge that?
Well, and the value of a touchdown to Miami can't be understated. They've gone 10 consecutive quarters now without a touchdown. But it did appear to me to possibly be a touchdown. As you know, I may have gotten a little ahead of myself on Twitter because I actually said that the Dolphins were now threatening to finally win a game. And Al Riveron, who's the head of officiating in the NFL, actually did a video in which he showed that play and then confirmed that the ruling on the field by the officials was in fact correct. And so had Flores challenged the play, it would have been upheld on the field as an incompletion. So it would have been done in vain.
Hey, Ed, our next time we're together, I'm going to show you on your Twitter app how to delete things really quickly.
I know how to delete them. I just don't know how to delete them quickly. I'm a little stubborn in that regard.
Well, I know you are, but
I was just going to say that, you know, I think the Cowboys had the game won as soon as 11 guys showed up at the stadium and were confirmed available to play. That's how one-sided it is in terms of talent between the Cowboys, who are among the upper echelon teams, and the Dolphins, who are playing so poorly that many people are accusing them of tanking. Although after the game, when Jerry Jones was asked about that outside the locker room, he said, showing a lack of effort on tape is the kiss of death in the NFL. And so I think that was his way of saying the Dolphins are not tanking. They're building for the future, but it's clear they've gone beyond what Jerry and Jimmy did in 1989 to begin the rebuilding process of their team by acquiring a lot of first round picks. They have 5 picks in the first and second rounds in next year's draft. And that's not unlike what the Cowboys accumulated in the Herschel Walker trade that allowed them to build a Super Bowl dynasty. The difference, I think, is, and Jimmy Johnson pointed this out this week, is that the Cowboys already made that trade and acquired those picks after they already had Michael Irvin and Emmitt Smith and Troy Aikman. So a much different situation where the Dolphins are trading away some of their good young players, even though they have them under terms of great, you know, contracts like Minka Fitzpatrick this week. So the Dolphins have become a lesser team every week. Despite that, though, you have to give the Cowboys credit. They're 3-0 for the first time in Jason Garrett's 9 years as a head coach, and we all believe that he has to take the next step, as Stephen Jones told us in training camp. That means reach the NFC Championship game, and I think this team has demonstrated 3 weeks in a row that they have that sort of talent on the roster and certainly that sort of potential.
All right, and we will have what Ed just referenced. I have Jerry saying that, and then also several other things that Jerry got into after the game. Ed, let's when you win 31-6, when a team does, sometimes it seems a little strange to pick it apart, but that's what we do because that was a weird first half, and it screamed of a Cowboys team that was not taking the other team seriously. In fact, you could certainly make the argument from a passer rating and just the overall numbers. The young Josh Rosen had a better first half than Dak Prescott. Prescott at halftime was 9-for-20 for 106 yards and an interception, a passer rating of 57.5. So we have celebrated the young man for his greatness for the first 2 weeks. But, Ed, he was really bad. He's missing on wide-open receivers. And then, of course, he's over there just chunking the ball up, harum scarum, in the middle of the field. One pass that was intercepted in particular, that was some people were like, well, that's the old Dak. Well, no, that was just a bad Dak that kind of showed up in that first half.
You know, I think one of the coaches I talked to after the game put it in perfect perspective in that it wasn't Prescott's best game. In fact, it was probably by far his poorest of the three games that he's played this year in the Kellen Moore offense. And the coach said, quote, if that's Dak's floor, we're going to win a lot of games this year. So, you know, in other words, if Dak, that's as bad as Dak Prescott is capable of playing with the talent around him and the system he's in, then the Cowboys expect to have a phenomenal amount of success going forward. I mean, I thought he played his way out of it. Maybe he was a little careless with the football early on. You know, he was well protected on the interception and just kind of heaved it down the middle of the field long, hoping for the best, and I don't think the ball ever had a chance of being completed, and he took full responsibility for that afterward. But he also demonstrated, I thought, the offensive group showed great resolve when they lost the touchdown to the Connor Williams penalty, the long touchdown play to Randall Cobb, and they came right back in that series, overcame the penalty, and went down and scored again on the second touchdown pass to Amari Cooper, who was uncoverable even by the Dolphins' best cornerback, Xavien Howard, who just signed a massive contract in the offseason. So I wouldn't be that concerned about the way Prescott played in the game, and I would actually be encouraged about the fact that he played well in the second half when the outcome was ultimately decided. And they had they had 200-yard rushers for the first time since, 95 or something like that, since Emmitt Smith was playing. So I think they showed a lot of capability, even though at times they struggled. And, you wouldn't expect that with a great offense, given the fact that this team's, margin of defeat, point differential in three losses is 117, which is the most in modern NFL history after three games. But I think worth pointing out, New England blew them out last week, and it was a 7-0 game at halftime.
Yeah, it was. You're right. It was a close game at halftime of that game, and I'm looking at it. Ed, Dak did come out. You got to, if we're going to get on to him for the poor start, 9 for 9 for 137 yards and a touchdown. And you're right; had one called back, big play called back, and he came right back, hit Cooper on a pretty big play, and that was because sometimes when you in that third quarter. First downs, Cowboys 9, Dolphins 1. Total yards, 170 Cowboys, Dolphins 14. And that was when we saw the Cowboys go, okay, we got a way more talented team, and we're going to go ahead and show you the exit. That happened in that third quarter.
Yeah, and so, and Dak Prescott added a rushing touchdown, so he's got the most rushing touchdowns by any quarterback since he entered the league with 19. He's had 8 games with 2 touchdown passes and a rushing touchdown, which he did against the Dolphins. That's 3 more than any other quarterback since he entered the league. So he's a dynamic player, and Kellen Moore continues to do a really good job of using him and all of his skill set whenever it's necessary, and certainly when they get in position to score points. They continue to have great success in the red zone yet again. I know they were stopped the one time and had to kick a field goal, but overall, they continue to have enormous success when they're in position to score touchdowns. They have generally done that. And that, to me, was the biggest fault of the team and what caused their offense to have such problems scoring a year ago, and ultimately was their vulnerability exploited in the playoffs.
All right. We're going to get to a lot of this, and we need to talk about the defense. Defense was, struggled a little bit in the first half, and finally kind of in the second half took over the game. But let's hear from the owner of the Cowboys. I had a chance to ask him a few questions, and then some funny stuff from Jerry involving the great Taco Charlton, who got several snaps at left defensive end for the Dolphins. Here is Jerry on the Doomsday Podcast.
Did you keep an eye on Taco over there?
We did, and saw him in the game, and saw him. I guess he got credit for a sack, didn't he? Real good. I'm going to try to claim part of that.
Obviously, it's only 3 games in.
What?
The season's only 3 games in, but you look at the NFC East standings, and you still have a 2-game lead on every other team in the division. It's too early, but what do you think this?
Well, it is. It is, and we have the ups and downs and the momentum. We even got a roughing the kicker call out there, and it—I don't know if you felt it, but it hit our momentum just a little bit. Just shows how quickly these things turn. That's our game, and we've got to learn that technique, that great technique on rushing the kickers. It's called.
You'll have
a lot better stats doing that than you will trying to hit something.
Well, Robert Quinn didn't protest. I don't know if you guys did. Y'all even talk about that before the game?
No.
Raising the fist, and he didn't do it. I don't know if you
he had done it in Miami and certainly with Round before that.
Well, I know Robert to be very genuine. He's always been very genuine. I was told about his character, his high character. I really saw it when he got a bum rap. It was a bum rap on that suspension.
Right.
And that the old deal, that's not me, that's not him. That's not him. That's not him as a person. Right. And I've just hated it so much for him. And I don't want to, by bringing it up, bring it up, because right. He's so past that. And he's one of the top character people we've had on this team.
Jerry, on that note, you fought for Zeke when he got suspended. Did you try and fight Quinn's suspension away?
Again, I don't want to get into any detail about that. And I know this, his character, his book, his record in the NFL is such high character. And I do want to emphasize that. I know he's had things relative to some of these social things, but not any but to it. You see the direction it's engendered by looking at his character. He's that strong in his beliefs and in his character. And I can't believe that in the short time he's been here that he's made the impression he's made, and certainly for me.
Jerry, how do you feel about Jason Witten's catch on 3rd and 20? What was going through your mind?
If he's making plays he wasn't making 15 years ago. He didn't have that imagination. He must have watched that on Monday Night Football. But seriously, I'm seeing him out there making plays, and we talked about either coming back or heading straight downfield when Dak gets some running room there, gets a little provision time. Well, he's the leader of the pack in getting it done. I'm looking forward to what this season brings about him and Prescott.
What did you make of the two-headed monster, you know, running back? There'd been talk about putting them in the same. It finally happened in this game. What did you make of the way it worked out?
Well, I really am so impressed. I just have such an appreciation for Pollard and his. There's some similarity, actually, with the way he approaches and feels out where the soft spots are. There's actually some similarities there with Zeke, but not any but to it. But then he turns on those burners. But I think that we will see them often at the same time in the game, because they both are outstanding route receivers, period, much less as a running back. But and I'm really pleased he gets it. He's as though he just really came in and acclimated to his assignments, to his duty, especially in his blocking assignments. He's a real fine for us.
You think it's better?
Did you have a chance to talk to Tony after the game?
What?
Did you say anything to Tony? What did you say to him?
Yeah, just something like that, wink or whatever.
Jerry, there's a guy who uses two running backs in New Orleans, and his name has also been associated with this team before. What did you think of the announcement of Sean Payton's 5-year extension?
Well, I know this. I think a lot of that organization, Mickey and everybody involved there, and Ms. Benson, and so nothing surprising about that. And they recognize everything that Sean is about positively, and which is what he's about, and doesn't surprise me at all that they want to keep him there. He's a big part of the fabric of New Orleans.
So put those rumors to rest.
What?
You put those rumors to rest then?
What rumors? What rumors?
Payton Dow.
Did you not hear that question?
I wouldn't do that.
Is that almost like Zeke?
There's a thrill going on. I hear it. Jalen forcing.
You know, we really are over in that tampering area.
Jerry, Jalen forcing the fumble, DeMarcus recovering it. Both guys you extended this offseason, are they making their money for you?
Yeah. I liked the way both of them were. So that meaningful in how we got it together, especially in that second half. I thought they set the tone, they made the plays. Yeah.
Jerry, to the earlier question about the division lead and what's going on the rest of the conference, are you starting to feel like a favorite again? Do you think the Cowboys are getting that identity?
Well, I think that that we're getting better. And I thought that we have the personnel. Particularly rewarded by how well our coaching staff is doing, this young coaching staff. This is a young bunch across the board. Now you say, well, you got Marinelli in there, he'll bring the average up a little for you, but other than that, it's a young bunch. I put Wright as my top two or three things about this team this year is that coaching staff.
Jerry, I don't want to beat the Robert Quinn thing to death, but did you feel like you needed to talk to him about that before the season, or did you expect him to kind of fall in line with not protesting?
Now, who are we talking about here? No, I didn't have any thought I wanted him. We recruited him. We wanted him here. What I have found out is that he is more impactful character-wise than I could have ever imagined, but I didn't think that was necessary.
Jerry, so people wanted the NFLPA to investigate after you said that you negotiated directly with Jay-Z. What is your response to that?
I don't have a response as to what the NFL would determine. I do know that we really have hammered out a great a great working relationship with this, and that worked great. What I didn't know that was going to come from the time I spent with him in the negotiation at length for hours is just how much I would be impressed with how cool he is in terms of not as an entertainer, but just as how genuine and how real he is as an individual.
Jay-Z.
And Jay-Z.
Yeah.
And so the hours and hours, the most that I got out of it was became such a fan of his as just a fellow human being, and his approach to business, the professions, and his approach to people that he influences. And it made a difference to know that he was going to be influencing this.
This Miami team was kind of under a microscope as far as maybe intentional tanking or things like that. Do you think that's harmful for the NFL if teams go in that direction where they intentionally try to lose games to get a better draft pick?
Well, and again, I'm not trying to be naive about your point that you're making. I don't know, because the games require so much physical. And these guys have such, in general, limited careers. And so their game reps, how they are basically putting it on tape for everybody to see, not just their team, but for all the teams that are going to be looking at them if they should become free agents or what have you. It just is not conducive on individual basis to not be making the next snap the best snap you've done. And that's facts. Nobody wants it on a tape. Something that might have what somebody might mark down as a loaf. But even at that, it can't be confused with not competing. So not competing on a piece of tape in the NFL is a kiss of death.
Are you worried about your alma mater? That was obviously a pretty low day for that group, and I know how much you love that school and the current program.
Yeah, and I really am, because the coach, I know on a personal basis, and for his time here in Dallas, his son plays with my grandson. They had a hooked up on a 50-yard touchdown pass the other night, Scott. And so, just as important, or even more important, I don't want the Hogs, and I have such a lifetime vested in them, and I've benefited so much from what I got and was given by my time there, that I just, any time I see them struggling, that bothers me. And then, of course, John Stephen, I just I know how he's trying to fit something in the eye of the needle. It's a challenge to be a starting quarterback in the SEC. And so I know that he understands that boys just got to fall and you got to be ready and competing so that the time comes. But very few people have ever, that breathe air, have ever done it starting for the, as an SEC quarterback in college football. So he's asking, I'm talking John Stephen,
yeah,
he's asking for a tall accomplishment level, much harder than owning the Dallas Cowboys. Seriously.
All right, there he was, as only Jerry could, on a variety of topics, including his. He was asked about his time with Jay-Z, and really gave some stilted answers of what actually he said to Jay-Z and how some of that negotiation went for Dez Bryant. So, an interesting. It was such a 31-6. By the way, boy, this is where Vegas is great. Ed, you said you saw a line that went up to 24. Highest one I'd seen was 23, but even if it went to 24, what did it end up being? What, 25? So it is remarkable how often they get it right. And so the Cowboys were, in most places, able to cover in this game, went down there and scored at the end. Ed, before we get to the defense, what do you make of that two-headed monster? You talked about it. I've always had trouble believing that they're actually going to use Pollard as much as they say they are. But, hey, so far, so good. Now, a lot of this happened in kind of garbage time for both backs. But still, I think you got to be – they got them on the field at the same time. You got to be encouraged by what you're seeing from what appears to be two pretty dynamic backs.
Yeah, I think, we've made the point that when they drafted Tony Pollard in the fourth round, it was not so much just to safeguard the position in case Ezekiel Elliott held out, which he did, although not into the regular season, but that they really envisioned he would have his most profound impact when Elliott was, also available. And Elliott rushed for 125 yards and Pollard had 103. And it was probably in a situation where the game was mostly in hand, although he played sporadically even before that. But last week they demonstrated that they trust this rookie because he played the last series of the third quarter, and that allowed them to rest Elliott and then play him fresh with the lead in the fourth quarter as kind of their hammer to end the game. And so I think the coaches continue to demonstrate that, Tony Pollard's a guy that they have a lot of trust in, a guy that's going to have a role even when Elliott is healthy and available, and even when Elliott's productive like he was in this game today. And quite honestly, Elliott, to his credit, seems perfectly fine with that fact. So I believe this is the first time Dallas has had 200-yard rushers in a game since Emmitt Smith and Chris Warren in 1998. So it's been quite a while, and I think it's invaluable to them to be able to use Elliott in this way, because we all know he has been the most overused back in all of football, having by far the most the heaviest workload since he came into the NFL in 2016 as a fourth overall pick. And so anything that they can do to preserve him and make him more effective toward the end of the season. And obviously they hope to play two more games this year than they played last year, if they can reach their goal of getting to a Super Bowl. And hopefully he'd be more effective late in the year if they can continue to find ways to use Tony Pollard. And today was the first time that they used them both together. So we continue to see Tony Pollard's role grow and his productivity have the same sort of trajectory.
Hey, I wanted to let you know, since you are very close to that whole Saints family, and you know that whole group, and the Mickey Loomis, the general manager, and certainly Sean Payton, and that whole crew over the years, and Breeze. After the game, Jerry was asked, I don't know, I felt like these questions asked last week. I don't really know why they're doing that for the game, but they wanted to know, could they finally put all the Sean Payton rumors to bad, because Sean Payton got that contract extension. What is it, 5-year contract extension? Now, if I know Sean, there's some kind of out clause in there. I mean, there's always something that would allow Sean Payton to get out of that if he needed to, but whatever. Let's call it a 5-year contract extension. And Jerry, and you couldn't really tell on this, the reason I'm bringing this up is you couldn't really tell on tape what it sounded like, because Jerry just stopped talking, and then he said, "What rumors?" And so he acted like Ed, that he's never heard a rumor.
He played dumb.
Yes, acted like
well, he. Well, I know that there have been times during Jason Garrett's tenure as a head coach where Sean Payton certainly felt like if he had wanted the Cowboys job, he could have gotten it. And so he didn't pursue it ultimately. And I think he's also being challenged right now in playing without Drew Brees in a way that he's not experienced as a Saints coach. They're 0-3 in games that Brees has not been available to start. So Sean Payton, in 13 years as a Saints coach, going into today, had never won a game without Drew Brees as his starting quarterback. So that's a challenge for Sean Payton, as is the fact that, you know, the Cowboys turned them upside down on offense last year with Chris Richard using his familiarity to really frustrate Brees and Payton. They had their worst game together last year in the loss to Dallas, and a lot of teams that played them afterward adopted many of the same tactics and did so successfully. So I think it's going to be an interesting game next week to see how Payton handles that, irregardless of what they do in Seattle today.
Yeah, and by the way, what they're doing in Seattle is the fact that Bridgewater is 11 for 15 for 105 yards and a touchdown, and they are driving while up 20-7 as we record this. And so Bridgewater seems to be on his game. Of course, they've got that running game, and they figured out over the years how to use kind of a two-headed monster. And so very interesting, the friendship and the history of Jerry and Sean Payton. All right, let's discuss, Ed, this Cowboys defense. I thought there were some pretty – I didn't think they really got after Rosen in the first half. They obviously were able to finally make a play down there. And, Ed, could you tell – we couldn't totally tell at the game. It looked like on the fumble that Jalen Smith was involved. Who really got in there? We know who recovered it. That was Lawrence. But who got in there and really should be credited for forcing that fumble? I mean, we can always look at the actual, what they decided on the final deal here. That was Jalen Smith got credit for it. Is that what it looked like to you?
You know what? I would probably not credit anybody on defense with causing the fumble.
Oh, really?
I think Kenyon Drake in the situation really did a poor job of protecting the football. Did appear to me the ball was directly hit by anybody. It wasn't, stripped out. He just failed to control the ball with his back to the defense in a situation where protecting the ball is the most important thing. And he obviously failed in that responsibility. And it wound up hurting his team. I don't know if it made a difference in the ultimate outcome of the game, but it denied the Dolphins a chance to, have the lead at halftime. And it was just a poor job by Kenyon Drake, who was a good player, but you got to protect the ball in that situation, and he didn't. I would say that in talking to the defense, some of the defensive coaches, that the thing that stood out to them was, the physicality that the Cowboys showed on defense, that their willingness to hit and their effort level, even though they did not initially get a lot of pressure on Rosen in the game, that they did play hard and they did hit and we're a physical presence. Of course, Jeff Heath obviously knocked Alan Hearns out of the game early on with a pretty vicious hit that many people thought should have been penalized, and obviously it wasn't. And from what I saw, I didn't think it should have been. It looked like they were both playing the ball, and they kind of hit face-to-face, if anything. But it appeared that Hearns was unconscious briefly, but that was a result of his head hitting the ground from the collision with Heath, not the collision itself.
Yeah, I would disagree in the sense that if we're actually going to, I mean, whether or not they're both going for the ball, if we're actually going to call these guys defenseless, I thought that was a textbook version of the receiver was completely defenseless. Whether that was Jeff Heath's intent or not to go in there and deliver some kind of vicious hit. Now, part of that is I have made fun of Jeff over the years because I do think more than almost anybody in the NFL, he is a headhunter. And he ended one guy's career for the Seattle Seahawks. That guy was fortunate to ever walk again. And so I do, I personally, I think I kind of have it out for Jeff Heath a little bit on that front. But that was, I don't know. That's a hard one to say. Now, on the other stuff that was going on, and I know Stretch, we're going to have Stretch on in a minute. He'll give his grades. I know one of the big problems he has with this defense right now, and Cowboys allowed 6 points. Let's not go too crazy on the defense's performance. But I think he just doesn't think they play the ball at all. Like, they just flat out can't play the ball. They got some guys that are good in coverage and can be there. I thought Byron Jones broke up some passes, but like today, for instance, Awuzie's down there seems to be in decent shape. Never finds the ball, gets called for the deep, pass interference. Who on this defense is really, really good at playing the ball? And I think that's a question, I think it's going to be something the Cowboys, have to continue to answer.
Well, it is a shortcoming. It has been a shortcoming of theirs. They did get the red zone fumble, so that was a key turnover in the game. And it's one of the reasons I think that the Cowboys had interest when the Dolphins were trying to trade Minkah Fitzpatrick, who, oh, by the way, wound up being traded to the Steelers and already has an interception in his very first game in a Pittsburgh uniform. But obviously the Dolphins wanted a first-round pick, and the Cowboys weren't willing to give that up. I can understand that because, do you want to go 2 years in a row without a first-round pick? They gave last year's up for Amari Cooper to help their, current team, and they could have probably done much the same for their defense had they been willing to do it in this particular circumstance. But I'm not sure Fitzpatrick really merits the Cowboys' first-round pick, and I don't know that adding him helps them achieve, going to an NFC Championship game or a Super Bowl. I'd still like to see some of the other players that had good training camps get an opportunity back there. They obviously played the game somewhat compromised on defense, and the Dolphins are a horrible team on offense. Like I said, they haven't scored a touchdown in 10 quarters. But I think Donovan Wilson's a guy we need to see in the secondary. He had 3 interceptions in the preseason. We'd like to see if he can be a guy who is a catalyst to create some interceptions that have been lacking for a number of years with this defense.
I liked Darian Thompson. I mean, he filled in nicely,
I thought. He was one of the guys who did what we talked about. He was one of the physical players in the lineup, especially around the goal line early on. So, yeah, I agree with you. I thought he made his presence felt in a very physical sort of way.
Ed, I thought you would like this. You're always a guy that's digging up nuggets and everything. So I had a little brief conversation with Tristan Hill. I'm not even going to – it wasn't that great, like the audio, but I thought this was interesting. He was making his first appearance as a Cowboy after being inactive in the first two games. This is the second-round pick out of UCF, Central Florida. You and I talked to his college defensive coordinator, Randy Shannon, and I think that generated a lot of interest. I thought this was kind of cool. He actually went in there and made a couple of key plays, and in fact, some of what he did helped lead to one key sack, as I recall. But I was asking him about, what was it like getting ready for this? Was he nervous? All that kind of stuff. And, of course, he kind of laughed when he said Marinelli believed in him, and he said that meant a lot to him. But you know what else he said that interested me is that he said Sean Lee has been the player staying on him and riding him and driving him. I just thought that was interesting that Sean Lee, veteran linebacker, would be the guy that was kind of in Tristan Hill's ear. And that was the first name that Tristan Hill brought up. It wasn't Marinelli. It was Sean Lee has been all over me to stay ready, and I give him a lot of credit. I just thought that was kind of interesting.
Well, and I think that's one more reason, that's one more way the Cowboys justify paying Sean Lee $6 million, even though he's now moved to strong side linebacker and might play, a little over a dozen snaps in a game. Certainly doesn't play the number that he did before Leighton Vander Esch was drafted and before Jalen Smith became a starter. But he certainly has value in that regard, and that he holds people accountable and he helps them prepare. And I'm sure he serves that same purpose with, you know, Leighton Vander Esch and Jalen Smith, even going into their second and fourth seasons. So, I think that's how you justify writing a $6 million check for Sean Lee every year.
Ed, last thing, and then we'll let you go. I did want to get your take on the Cowboys going to 3-0, first time in the Jason Garrett era. Is that right? Is this the first time?
That is correct.
And is correct. Eagles lose today, and boy, Eagles are now two games behind the Cowboys. We thought this was going to be a two-team race. We didn't think the Eagles were going to, like, start falling out of the race. And they're not completely out of the race, obviously. We saw the Cowboys come back in it last year after they had started at, what, 4-5 or whatever it was, or 5-6, and they kind of, you know, were able to fight back into it. But where do you – you talk to some of the coaches. You've done all your due diligence. Where do you kind of feel like the Cowboys think they are at this point, other than the obvious that they're two games clear of the lead in the NFC East?
Yeah, well, I think the fact that, you know, they've been able to score on offense like they have, 30 points or more every game, 3 weeks in a row. The fact that Dak Prescott is clearly a much improved quarterback, and what today was a 75th touchdown pass of his career in just 51 games, fastest quarterback in Cowboys history to achieve that. Tony Romo did it in 63 games. So he beat Romo by a dozen games. But the fact that they've got a rookie in Tony Pollard who's able to contribute to the running game and get involved in the third down passing aspect of the game, if they can stay healthy, I think they're as good as anybody there is out there in the NFC. Now, I think they're going to be challenged far more going forward than they have been to this point. I mean, the Dolphins were the worst ranked offense, the worst ranked defense. They had, you know, scored the fewest points. They'd allowed the most. So, and they were on the road for the first time. So winning against them is no, you know, great accomplishment. That being said, you can only beat the people that your schedule has you playing week to week. And they're going to be fortunate next week, and they're not going to face Drew Brees in the Superdome. But there are challenges and adversities surely they're going to have to deal with. I think you've got to like the way you got to feel good about the kind of offense that Kellen Moore's created, the diversity that he's brought to the offense. So I think there are a lot of things for the Cowboys to be optimistic about as they finish the fourth final quarter of the first phase of the season next week in the Superdome. I think they have to feel good about that.
Yeah, and by the way, Ed, while we've been recording this, the Saints have now gone up 27-7, and Bridgewater is on a roll. I think he's 16-21 now, just threw another touchdown pass, and they are rolling right now at Seattle in just horrible conditions. I mean, it's raining like crazy in Seattle.
It's really the first time Teddy Bridgewater's played well in any start for the Saints. He didn't play well when he replaced Brees for three quarters last week against the Rams, which is definitely a challenging assignment to go against Wade Phillips' defense in a game on the road when you're not expecting to play. But I think this demonstrates that there's a reason that the Saints traded to acquire Teddy Bridgewater from the Jets, and there's a reason after his first year with them that they made him the highest paid backup quarterback in football to remain on their roster with them and not pursue a starting job somewhere else.
Yeah, I am I'm with you, and I think it's turned into what looks like a very genius move by them. Ed, good stuff, and excited to hear from you. I'll be out in studio next. In fact, unless I just decide I may just bring the Doomsday Crew to New Orleans at the Superdome.
It'd be a lot. Thought. I think you guys should just pile in the car and head on down.
Yeah, it'd be a lot easier than getting a credential here. I mean, Lord help, they make me jump through about a million hoops. I've covered the team for 17 years, but that's okay. I'm not gonna get into that right now. Ed, good stuff. Really appreciate you.
Good to talk to you. We'll do it again next week.
That sounds good. There he goes. Ed Werder, ESPN's own, and of course, Doomsday Podcast. That's really his first priority in life. And we appreciate Ed being on, as Ed will be back on the Cowboys beat next weekend for a Sunday night appearance in New Orleans. The man loves New Orleans, and he has very close ties to that organization. All right, before we get to Glenn Stretch Smith, I do want to say my bookie is always the right play. You bet, you win, they pay. My bookie has live in-game betting every NFL game. They got the most rewarding player perks in the business. And for you fantasy guys out there and gals, you can even bet the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score each game. Love this stuff. Up to $1,000 for the first deposit bonus. Double your first deposit. Use the promo code DOOMSDAY, DOOMSDAY, to activate the offer. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie, MyBookie. And don't forget to use the promo code DOOMSDAY when creating your account to claim the bonus. MyBookie, one of the best in the business. Love working with them. They have become really brilliant in this field, and we love having them with the Doomsday podcast. All you got to do, by the way, the better bonuses, the prop bets, all of that stuff. And this year, of course, they're hosting the first online handicapping super contest. First place guaranteed to win $100,000, and it only costs $100 to enter. Please get involved. Do all the things I said. Bet, win, get paid.
Yes.
Fredo, you ready?
Yes, we are.
All right, it is time for our stretch plays, and we will actually stretch marks. Love stretch marks because he does give his marks, and he gives his grades. And it is Glenn Stretch Smith, former Cowboys coach and scout, former college coach, former college football player, joining us. The man has so many credentials. I am live at the stadium from the beautiful suite high above, actually on the silver level, looking down the Cowboys Stadium in the aftermath of a 31-6 win. And Stretch, it was a workmanlike type win in the second half. Certainly a really poor performance by the Cowboys in that first half. Let's start with the defense. Defense was struggling a little bit. Obviously, the offense made some mistakes as well. But defense, let's start on that back end. You've been critical of this secondary. I like the play of Darian Thompson filling in for Xavier Woods. I thought he actually made some pretty good plays. But what did you make of this secondary?
Well, again, I mean, both Luzier and Byron Jones are really good cover guys. But we talked about this week one. It's mind-blowing how they cannot get their hands on the football. Luzier gets called for the PI, and he's in great position. Just turn and look for the football. And, I don't want to be critical of the job that, the defensive coaches have done, because obviously, this is a good football team. But secondary-wise, I don't understand why they don't get their hands on more footballs. They are in position more to make more plays, and it really is. It's one of those things where it almost looks as if it's contagious right now. I mean, guys, you're going to get in these football games, especially when things aren't clicking offensively, like what happened in the first half with the Cowboys today against a better football team, where you need a play, you need to stem the tide. And I mean, I just don't see it happening. I agree with you. I mean, I think Thompson did a really good job for Woods. And I saw some good things as far as coverage-wise. But get your hand on the football. It blows me away that three times today, Luzier is in position and cannot even touch the football. And I'm telling you, it looks contagious from what happened to Byron Jones last week. And to me, that's alarming, because you've got to be able, when you start talking about playing, the Sean Paytons of the world, which they got the Saints next week, you start, Aaron Rodgers, Green Bay. I mean, you've got to get your hands on some footballs. And boy, I mean, I hope it's something that, that they start to work on, and maybe they are working on it. I don't know. I don't go over there, and I certainly don't want to be critical of that. I try to stay away from that, really watch the film and study and let my eyes kind of see and give an honest opinion. But damn, they got to get their hands on some footballs.
Yeah. I wish you could see my eyes right now. They're behind sunglasses. And, you know, I love to put my eyes on some of these things. Stretch, as you move to the linebackers, do you like, I thought Jalen, finally, they hadn't looked that great today. I thought Jalen and the man Vander Esch, the Wolf Howl, they kind of got going a little bit today. And finally, in that second half, and even the first half to a certain extent, did make some plays. What did you think of the linebacking core?
Well, the linebackers played well. I mean, this is the first time we've seen them really cut loose and let them blitz a little bit. Now, I believe that they're getting that ready. They're getting that ready for Sunday night. They're getting that timed up. And you saw them, wreck havoc, get back and really cause some problems with the protections that Miami was using. They're good football players, Matt. I mean, I'll roll it right over into the defensive front. I thought it was great seeing Quinn back in there. I thought that, you know, you were able to see some of the younger guys get in and make some plays, some of the tackles who were able to get in there. I even saw Hill in there a little bit. I think they have a really nice rotation. All in all, I thought the effort that you saw today from the defense, I mean, pretty much graded a B. I mean, above a good performance, but nothing great. And again, very concerning that they are not getting their hands on the football. So, you know, let's give the defense a B as a whole. I do like the Thompson. I thought Heath made a great play on that ball. I love that he kept his head up. You know what I mean? They could have really penalized him there on that seam to Hearn, and he was able to. He was going to make a play on the football. I think he's a smart young man. I like the rotation, the defensive line. I like that you saw Quinn in there. Obviously, he can get over the edge, and that causes them to have to turn some things back. So overall, I think the defense gave you a B effort today, but they have got to get their hands on some more footballs in the secondary.
Yeah, that would be full. Let's look at the other side, and I start the quarterback. Pretty poor performance in the first half. 9 for 20. Didn't have a whole lot going on. Threw that pick. Just kind of harem scarem. Ran, you know, whirled out right and just chunked it up for grabs. Basically, Miami made a play on the ball. What did you make? He did respond really nicely in the third quarter and kind of tightened things up. What did you make of the first kind of tough performance for Dak Prescott this season?
Yeah, he did. Again, didn't I? And I mean, I really thought that the whole team was, was flat. I mean, they came out really flat, and I thought the quarterback played that way. I mean, he let that, you know, he could have easily ran that the where he threw that ball late over the middle. I mean, those are things I think that he'll correct. It's almost like if you're a Cowboy fan, you wanted to see this. You wanted to see him kind of have one of those lackadaisical efforts where they can, hey, go back and focus and know. It's hard to stay focused when you're watching, you know, when you're watching a team like Miami who, you know, had not played good the first 2 weeks. I mean, giving up, I think they gave up 7 sacks last week. I mean, it's hard to watch them. They've, you know, given up on Minka Fitzpatrick, and I mean, just a real lackadaisical first half. I think Dak will learn from that. It's hard to ding him grade wise because I don't think he made a lot of mental errors. I think he did some things trying to get outside of the pocket that were unlike him, but those are things that to me are very correctable. And offensively, I thought the second half is what you want to see the Cowboys do. He checked a couple of times to a little speed option when they were going to run a little blitz off the edge. And I like that. I just think that all in all, you saw what was a flat Cowboys team, and the quarterback played that way. And you know, they made the corrections in the second half. So, you know, overall, a B effort by the quarterback.
B all the way around so far. Wide receivers, Amari had a nice day. Cobb had one called back. I thought Smith made a couple of nice plays, but all these guys kind of are pretty good at running after the catch. They'll kind of get in there, and they seem to be pretty physical receivers for the most part. Even these guys that aren't that big What did you make of the wide receivers? And let's throw the tight ends in there as well. Obviously, Witten made a couple of really nice plays.
Yeah. Witten's smart player. I mean, I don't know if you saw it in the game. He even at one time checked, wanted to make sure they were on the same page. I'm going to try to pull that audio tonight going to Channel 8. But, I mean, he makes a check where he sees the blitz the same way the quarterback sees the blitz. You know, receiver-wise, they can catch the football. They run good routes. What I like is they block the perimeter. And we saw two running backs today rush for 100 yards for the Cowboys. And the reason they rush for the 100 yards, obviously we know the offensive line. They got a great offensive line here. But really block the perimeter well. And that's something that's hard to get receivers to do. I mean, they feel like, hey, I'm paid to catch a football. But when you see Amari Cooper, when you see Cobb, you see Smith down the field getting blocks, to me that shows what type of team you got here. And they're unselfish. They're flying around. They're making plays. I mean, I can't give this receiving corps anything but an A today.
Ooh,
and
nice.
It's an unbelievable job. Now, the tight ends, it's another story. I mean, I saw Jarwin one time. Dak breaks out of the pocket, and Jarwin's standing in the flat with a guy right behind him. And, I mean, he's, you know, he looks like he's waving his arms trying to land one of those helicopters. And to me, that's a bad look. I mean,
yeah.
Schultz needs to pick his game up. Jarwin dropped the ball in the flat. So, I mean, really, other than Witten, almost a below-average effort from your tight ends. And that's got to get better because, quite frankly, the way that this offense and what they like to do with their, you know, with their schemes and with their personnel groups, sometimes they want to play with three tight ends. And so those other two guys have got to pick their game up. But overall, I mean, a good job. Really good job by the receivers and a really good job by Jason Witten and, Jarwin and Schultz. They just flopped around out there today. I mean, they played about like the Cowboys did the whole first half.
All right. The tight ends getting a little bit of a rough grade there from sounds like other than Witten, you would have given them a C or something like that, but Witten maybe gets them up to a C+. What about running backs combined for 228 yards? And a touchdown. What did you make of the two-headed monster the Cowboys threw at the Dolphins today?
Well, there were a couple snaps that they put them both in the backfield at the same time. I thought it was, you know, I think it's the offensive staff continuing to try to get those personnel matchups. I think both these running backs, obviously Zeke's a heck of a player. He's playing himself into shape, and he looks really good. Pollard showed me some things. I mean, he showed some burst to be able to hit it up in there on his touchdown. And again, I mean, I can give nothing but praise to the running backs and how they played today. I mean, a B+ effort for both of those guys. Blocked well, ran screens. They can catch the football. So I like the direction and the upgrade that they've given themselves, Pollard over what was, Smith last year.
O-line, for the most part, held up. I mean, there's always going to be some holding calls because this is the NFL we have now, and holding calls have been up like 65% this season. But for the most part, were you pretty impressed by the O-line play?
Yeah, I thought the O-line played really well. I mean, I thought both of those holding calls were really, really marginal calls. I mean, the hands were not outside of the framework, and so, the thing that I think the NFL's got to understand is they're going to pack it, being defenses, they're going to pack it down in there and try to make you get that ball outside. And the two times that the Cowboys got it outside, they should have been big runs. And the first thing, the defensive staff's hollering's holding. And yeah, you can really call holding every play. But I mean, when the hands are inside the framework, I thought both those were marginal calls. I think Lyle Collins, guys, is a heck of a football player. I really do. I mean, Tyron gets all the credit from a tackle perspective, but Lyle is really, really, really come into his own. And so I think this offensive line is going to continue to get better. I think Frederick we hadn't talked much about him because, coming back and trying to play himself back into shape That's not always easy to do, but I thought the offensive line did an outstanding job today, and really a B-plus effort for the offensive line, a marginal A, and they would have had an A had they not, you know, been given those holding penalties.
All right, almost borderline grade right there, about an 89 for the offensive line. Only A I really heard was the wide receivers. I think you did give them an A, but the tight end certainly had to dock them a little bit. Thought they were out there flopping around a little bit. Stretch, good stuff. We'll continue to down on this. Watch Stretch tonight. He'll be out there with Del Hansen on WFAA Channel 8 in Dallas. Are you going to have the Cavaricis on?
I'm going to throw a little curveball tonight in the footwear, but I'm glad that you're holding me accountable. And I know our boy Frito, he's the producer. He's kind of a footwear savant, so maybe he'll be able to help you out and school you up on what I'm wearing tonight. But I appreciate you noticing, Mosley.
Yeah, you bet. Frito bringing guests into the show tonight, so always good when Frito brings a guest to the show. That's always kind of nice to see. Good stuff, Stretch. I'll talk to you soon, okay?
Have a good evening, guys.
There he goes. Glenn Stretch Smith with his stretch marks. And it is, boy, that's about a wrap. I mean, we did some strong work there. Ed was in Colorado for this one. And got a hold of him, DJ Ringenberg, and I on the scene out here at Cowboys AT&T Stadium. And boy, they're kind of putting the wraps on this thing. 31-6 effort. Cowboys continue to march on. One thing we've observed, and of course, Frito Nation Productions doing an incredible job for us. Frito, one thing we've observed from out here is that these Saints had a whole week to prepare. They have gone to Seattle. And while the lead has been trimmed to 27-14, who knows? Maybe they'll cough this thing up, but it appears that the Saints will be ready at home for the Cowboys. And finally, somewhat of a challenge. I love that I'm hearing people say, well, Cowboys kind of needed this. They needed to be kind of jostled around a little bit. I'm hearing the same thing about my Baylor Bears. We needed some problems against the Rice Owls. No, it's never good to get pushed around in the first half against a lesser team. You want to get out there and you want to take advantage of it. Cowboys didn't do it today. If they play like this against New Orleans, they will lose. They will lose their first game of the season. Cowboys sitting here at 3-0, though. First time in the Jason Garrett era. Thank you to everyone. Thank you to Hodges Capital. Thank you for what you do. Craig and Clark Hodges, enormous supporters of what we do. And the Hodges Fund, it was created years and years ago. And these are a series of mutual funds that will take care of you for life. And I'm talking retirement. I'm talking in the immediate. These guys get it done. And that's why they're the best in the business. And that's why if you're walking on Wall Street and you go, hey, you ever heard of Craig or Clark Hodges? They'll go, yeah. Yeah, we just saw them on CNBC the other day. These are the people that partner with the Doomsday Podcast. We're proud to have them. Thanks to DJ Ringenberg, done great work out here on the site, on the scene. And Frito, as always, Ed Werner, Glenn Stretch Smith. And thanks again to the Nation family. That's Jim and Sally Nation. And you'll see their names on buildings at Dallas Baptist University. They are the ones who provided our suite to do this show tonight. We're going to bid you farewell from Cowboy Stadium. It is the Cowboys 31, the Miami Dolphins 6. Good night, everybody.